talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange, read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on, turn on, I'm in, is on today, the Exchange Club.
It's a getaway Friday, May the 22nd, 2026, Memorial Day weekend, 17 minutes past the hour, joined in studio by Matt Morgan. Don't forget, we'll be on tonight live, 8:15 to 10 p.m., and Matt will be on tonight, 10:15 to 11. We will not be on Monday morning for Memorial Day. That's one of the 6 days we take off a year, so we'll have repeat programming on Monday morning. Listen to that, 3-day weekend. So, Matt, what's on the show tonight?
On my show tonight, we're going to be talking about, politics and sports, as per usual, but I wanted to probably spend most of the time talking about the loss of Republican 4th District representative from Kentucky who lost the primary. Very upsetting.
Massey.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, speaking of loss... 2 weeks ago today, Barney Frank was on this program.
Yes.
Legendary representative, came on my show many, many times. We knew he was in hospice care, but certainly did not think he was going to die 11 days after the interview, but he did. Now, Barney Frank, in that interview, that last interview, 11 days prior to his death, I asked him what message he wanted to leave Democrats with, or people listening to the program, and this is what Barney Frank said. 2 weeks ago today. Representative Frank, if there are Democrats out there listening right now, what is the number one most important thing they need to know from Barney Frank as he gets ready to depart this world?
That if liberals, mainstream Democrats, continue to support economic fairness, which we hadn't for a long time, and advocate social and cultural change that meets real needs and fills real gaps in society, but does not reach the point of alienating people and does not take toxic positions and insist that everybody endorse them, that we can defeat populism. That is, I think we're at a cusp here. And if we stop doing the wrong things and keep doing the right things, we can defeat this, especially because Donald Trump is imploding. And I think it's very clear, you know, we had first underestimated Trump, then we overestimated him, and now we're back to an accurate estimate, which is, frankly, the man's a fool. He's not very bright, and he is so dominated by his ego that he acts in ways that are counterproductive. Excuse me.
No.
But What happened was, that's what we thought of him 20 years ago. Go back, people didn't take him seriously. And then he runs for president and shocks everybody by winning, at which point people said, oh my God, this guy is more than we thought. He's not a fool, he's a political genius. And he wins power by exploiting this ability he has to take advantage of people's anger. But having one power, it turns out, no, we were right in the first place. He is kind of a fool. He doesn't know very much. He has one power. He's what's called an idiot savant. He's idiotic about everything except one thing. That one thing is the ability to soak resentment and benefit from that. And he wins the presidency based on that. But having won the presidency, you look at him today, and I think he's floundering. So put all that together, and it seems to me to be a moment when we can win a historic victory, and that's the most important thing.
The legendary Barney Frank on this program 2 weeks ago died this past Tuesday at the age of 86. What can you say?
Well, that's unfortunate.
He was always a good guest and with it right up till the end. I guess we can only hope that that happens with us. But he'll go down as the first openly gay congressman in the history of Congress. 1987, he came out of the closet, and he also will go down as one of the most outspoken, entertaining congressmen. He didn't care about how he looked or how he dressed or how he sounded, and he had a big attitude, and that's he was also Jewish. He used to say, I'm gay, I'm Jewish, and I'm left-handed. You know, I'm everything you should not be.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Well, that was him, though. He had a funny personality. He was just a very... He was always a good guest, though. I never saw the attitude. I never saw the temper that people said that he had. And I interviewed him quite a few times.
Well, the temper probably had more to do with, like, you know, legislative act or something.
Only one Barney Frank, but I certainly never dreamed it would only be 11 days after the interview that he'd be gone.
Yeah. That it happened quick.
Well, you brought it up yesterday.
Yeah, because, you know, because obviously the interview had just happened, and I saw on the news that he had passed away, and then so I was like, man, what are the odds?
Yeah. So, rest well, Barney Frank, and who knows? Maybe we'll be doing an interview again one day. But Matt doubts it, but you never know.
Yeah, I'll doubt it, but, you know, here's hoping, I guess.
Now, Stephen Colbert signed off last night after 11 years on CBS with the Colbert Late Show. And it's kind of sad in a way because it's the end of his 11 years, and he did not want to sign off. He was canceled. But it's also the end of 33 years of late night on CBS. David Letterman started it in 1993 and wrapped up last night.
So what are they putting there in its place?
Oh, like a Byron Allen something.
Who's Byron
Allen? I have no idea. Some man, comics sitting around talking to each other or something. They bought the time. It's no longer a talk show. It's no longer...
Oh, they bought the time.
Yeah, I guess. He's a billionaire, I think.
Okay.
Oh, boy. But anyway, and he was the number one. He went out number one. Number one talk show in late night.
That's how you do it.
And
he's going to get a job somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, he'll work again. Because he got canceled. And that also made it dramatic.
Well,
because he was number one. He was canceled.
Do you think he's going to get put on another network, though?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Or do you think he's going to, like, start a podcast or whatever?
I don't know. Probably do something.
I mean, I don't know how much he cares about money, but, I mean, he could probably make a load of money off a podcast.
Well, but the point is, you know, CBS says they canceled him because late night cost too much money, and then, of course, CBS was also going through a merger at the time.
That he was critical of.
Yep. And the next day after he was critical, he was canceled.
Yep.
So, there's that. So, that was dramatic. But last night, ending his show, people wondered, how would he wrap it up? You know, is he going to take a shot at the network? Is there going to be some big finale? Well, here's the setup. I played it earlier, but you might be a new listener or you might want to hear it again. He did his show, as did David Letterman, from the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York. Now, the Ed Sullivan Theater is where Ed Sullivan did his shows. And the biggest performance on Ed Sullivan, without doubt, was the first American appearance of the Beatles. And that footage is well known, and that happened at the Ed Sullivan Theater back in the 1960s. Well, of course, Paul McCartney is one of the last Beatles left. And, well, this is what happened last night as Stephen Colbert was signing off from the Ed Sullivan Theater, 33 years of late night. Now, the first thing you're going to hear is Stephen Colbert, and you're going to hear other musicians, and then about 3 minutes in, keep listening, and you'll see what happens. The lights go out, and then they come back on. But this is what happened last night on CBS as Stephen Colbert was signing off.
Hello? Everybody's talking like they can't sit down and looking like they can't stand up. It must be the latest style, and I've seen a lot of things that you never see. Back on the mile up to the hanging tree. And some people can't keep their fingers clean, just clicking their heels to the beat of the scene. Trying to keep careening into the first edition of
of last night's obituaries. Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me. No tombstone would ever surprise me when I'm locked in a room about half the size of a matchbox. Got holes in my socks, they match the ones that I got in my feet. I put my feet in the holes in the street, and somebody paid me over. I was a statue standing on a corner. Tell me, how else can a boy get to see those pretty pleats?
A two-horse race, and he changed his bets like it was just another brand of cigarettes. Some people judge and they just guess the rest. They can't understand it, don't mean that you're blessed.
They ought to catch the express,
next step in the way,
that way you can't forget.
Jump up, hold on tight. Can't trust a promise or a guarantee, 'cause the man round the curve says that he's never heard of you or me.
Good night.
Oh no!
Come on, Benny. Let's go.
And that was the end of the Stephen Colbert Show last night on CBS. Could not have been any better.
I agree. That's a good way to close it out.
Well, Paul McCartney, the symbolism of the Beatles thing, but then to sing Hello, Goodbye,
Hello, Goodbye.
But the song is You Say Goodbye, I Say Hello. So I think that's pretty big.
Isn't the song just called Hello, Goodbye?
I think so, but the lyrics are You Say Goodbye, I Say Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying goodbye, but obviously I think he's not going anywhere.
Where's he going?
I don't know. He'll let you know in a few weeks.
You're supposed to know these things.
You don't announce it before you leave, then the leave is not that dramatic. But I thought that was great. That's how you want to go. Dancing with your whole staff with Paul McCartney.
Yeah, there's a lot of staff. You know, honestly, if I were a Paramount or whoever, I'd consider cutting the show too. There was like at least like I don't know, a lot of people. I'm terrible at guessing, but hundreds.
You know, yesterday Sam Donaldson took the Colbert questionnaire in honor of Stephen Colbert's last night.
How'd that go?
It was good. You want to take it? Adam called in and took it.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, in 2000, this is how it all came to be. By the way, I've been on longer than Colbert, just with this show.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, well, I've been 12 years in June.
Longevity. And
I'm going to sing last day. 2019, Keanu Reeves was guesting on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert when the John Wick actor was asked, "What do you think happens when we die?" After taking a beat, Reeves delivered a very thoughtful response. "I know that the ones who love us will miss us." The exchange went viral and got Colbert thinking about ways to regularly play with a more spontaneous line of questioning. So, there are 15 questions in the Colbert questionnaire. President Obama has taken this. Tom Hanks has taken this. Many guests on his show have taken it. Colbert took it the night before he went off the air. And Sam Donaldson took it yesterday. So, on this show, here it is. Number one, what's the best sandwich?
I like turkey with pepper jack cheese, and you gotta toast it, and you get like lettuce, tomato, cucumber, and like green bell peppers.
What's the one thing you own that you really should throw out, besides your clothes?
One thing I own that I should throw out? Oh, man, there's probably a whole bunch of things. I don't know, I got a whole bunch of stuff. I could probably empty out a lot of stuff.
One thing?
I don't know. I got a whole bunch of like little like knick-knack things that are probably just pointless. I don't do anything with them.
What's the scariest animal?
Scariest animal? I don't know. Bears, I guess. Bears are pretty scary.
Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Have you ever asked someone for an autograph?
Yes, I have.
Who?
It was Bobby Floyd.
Oh, Bobby Floyd. What do you think happens when we die?
I think that nothing really happens. I think that your atoms just kind of go to work elsewhere. They'll become like grass and like plants and stuff.
Favorite action movie?
I don't know, Die Hard. It's the first one that came to mind.
Favorite smell?
Favorite smell? Like campfire. It's a good smell.
Okay. least favorite smell?
Skunks. Skunks are pretty bad.
Exercise worth it?
No, not really.
Flat or sparkling?
Flat or... Oh, I see. What? Like...
Water, wine, whatever.
Flat.
Most used app on your phone?
Probably YouTube.
You get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. What is it?
That one's hard. I got all kinds of them. As of late, I've been really into Man in the Box by Alice in Chains. I'll rock with Man in the Box.
What number am I thinking of?
Oh, 13.
Oh, nope. You're wrong. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
5 words. Hopefully it'll be great.
There you go. That's the Colbert questionnaire. I like it.
I think it's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good...
It's random questions.
Well, it's kind of like the Proust questionnaire, which we have done on this show before. I like the Proust questionnaire. It's supposed to reveal something psychological about you. I think that reveals something psychological about people, too.
What'd you get there?
Fatalist. phone lines are open. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. See, comedy. There is comedy done on this show. 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz if there's anything on your mind. But I think that's, you know, it's a bit. You got to have a great bit. David Letterman had the top 10 list. Jay Leno had headlines. Johnny Carson had Karnak. Colbert had the Colbert questionnaire. You got to have something that you can do like that. A great signature bit.
You got a great signature bit?
Oh, I'm sure I do somewhere.
That's good.
Yeah.
You got the whole, you know, thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Intro and exit.
Thank you, Ted Williams, man with the golden voice. I don't know. I get it backwards.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Yeah, I had it right the first time.
I got the intro and the exit. Yeah.
Yep. Heading to the dugout.
Heading to the dugout. yeah, but no, I think it's a great bit. It's a good bit. Fun.
We should steal it. Just start asking everybody who calls in those questions.
Well, I think it's a fun thing if you know the person well. When Sam, I thought, this is perfect. Because Sam Donaldson was coming on to Remember Barney Frank. And I thought, wonder if he would do the Colbert questionnaire on the last morning. So he did. And it was good.
He give any good answers?
He did. Now, don't ask me what they were, because I can't remember anything. I just remember he said favorite sandwich was grilled cheese.
Yeah, I can get behind that,
right
too.
Off the bat.
Yeah, grilled cheese, good stuff.
But I think it shows a good sense of humor to take that.
Have you taken it?
No.
Why not?
No. Because I think it would reveal too much. You don't want to be too revealing.
What's
on a
revealing
show like
about it?
Well, it reveals something, I'm sure.
Your favorite sandwich?
Yeah.
I mean, you got the whole what do you think happens after you die?
Yeah, I've never said that.
I think I don't know is a good answer.
Well, I don't know if that's my opinion. I have my own opinions on things. I don't know. It's a whole different thing.
You can just say I don't know. That's a good answer.
Well, I don't want to lie.
Well, so you do know.
Maybe. You never know. Anyway, what's the point here? What were you on? Okay, did we cover all the news of the day? Oh, so do you think the person is psychopathic that I was talking about last hour? Let's get back to that, because you know I think when somebody is rude to you,
I don't think they're psychopathic. I think that's a bit much. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if I somehow came to find out they had bipolar disorder.
I think they do have bipolar disease.
I think that wouldn't surprise me. And I think by proxy, them having a mental break probably wouldn't be surprising.
You know what I think the great irony of this is that what they claim they're angry about is that I always think there's something wrong with them when they claim there is nothing wrong with them. But
well, there's clearly something
there's
wrong.
Clearly something wrong
there's
with
clearly
that.
Something wrong.
So I think that's the... It's like one of those great circles. One of those great circles of irony.
Why don't you just give up?
Well, I can't fix anything. I mean, I'm not... If they're not going to be honest, I can't fix it.
Yeah, so like, what's the point in keep asking? I think it's just kind of a...
No, I don't ask anymore.
Oh,
about,
okay.
No, I just asked them how they were doing. I didn't say, I'm going to fix your problems. But, that is a great irony in life. And I think what this person, what I have discovered in life, is I think they mask their insecurities by claiming there are no insecurities. And so that...
Well, I think...
That makes you the bad person
for
asking.
That's not a good way to mask insecurities.
I think it is for them. It's a deflection.
Because
I'm accusing you of doing something wrong by even asking. So that takes the onus off of me of having
it. I don't think being insecure is something you're doing wrong.
No, but I think they see it as a wrong. See, you got to go into the pathos of this person and understand...
I mean, I don't know, I don't know a lot about it, I guess.
One of the things that they told me very early on when I met them that has always stuck with me... They what's the,
you gonna get yourself in trouble by saying it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No. They said their grandmother taught them this when they were young, and it's, I forget exact, but it's something like get up, show up, something like that.
Get up, show up, shut up.
No. But it's always, it's always don't let people see you sad. Why show up and cry about something? Don't complain about something. Always look your best. Dress your best. You know, don't let people see you any less than great. And I think in a way that has stuck with them over the years to where they almost use that as a mantra.
Get up, dress up, show up?
Could be. But they have said that to me more than once. And I think that's ultimately where it all goes. Because I know this person has went through some things over the years in which they did mask it. And their philosophy is, when I say, well, boy, that's hard to go through, isn't it? Their philosophy almost is, will complaining fix it? How will that fix it?
I agree.
Well, no.
To that extent.
That's how you get screwed up. Because...
Well, I mean, just complaining about something's not going to fix it. I mean, you got to do something about the problems.
No, because that's what complaining is. You're saying, I'm unhappy. I'm not good today.
I know a lot of people who love to complain, and you will offer, like, simple solutions.
But that's...
See,
this is how people get screwed up. This is why everybody needs to see a psychiatrist. Yes, some people over-complain, but if you're under-complaining, that's just as bad. Because you are not expressing any emotion. Nobody knows what's going on with you. Nobody knows if you're upset or not. You're not venting. You're not getting it off your chest. You're internalizing everything because of some mantra you learned when you were a child.
You can do that.
Yeah. And it doesn't end well. It ends like this. It ends, you get to a certain age, and you get defensive, and you get prickly.
I don't know, a lot of the times if I get, like, genuinely upset or something, I tend to, like, internalize a lot
of it. Look at you! You're a fatalist, you're angry, you're argumentative.
There is no fatalism.
Wait till you're in
there,
like,
is no
40s.
Anger. Like, I do get loud a lot when we talk about things, but it's not anger. It's like, I just... Like, when we talk about things I enjoy talking about, usually I talk louder and I talk quickly. It's kind of just how I am in general.
All I'm saying is, you cannot internalize everything.
Well, nobody cares what your problems in life are.
That's what you think. But they do.
Everybody else got their own problems to deal with.
Not at the same time.
I'm capable of dealing with my own problems.
That's the phrase that layers the brick road to the psychiatric ward. That's exactly what does it. And it does, because you have to vent it out sometimes. You have to go to people and say, what do you think?
I talk to my cats.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
How do they answer?
They don't.
There you go.
See, that's why you got to talk to the cats. They don't really know what you're talking about.
Wasn't one of your cats sick this week?
Yes, I had to take them to the vet.
Maybe they got tired of hearing it. Maybe they're just depressed.
No, I don't. Maybe does depression make you sick?
Could.
Well, maybe.
But I believe that's what's going on here. And it's a sad, you know, spiral into whatever.
Well, I would hope if you recognize that you're spiraling, you would go.
You
well.
Don't recognize it.
You don't recognize a spiral.
No. Because you're still, all my life, I've lived by this. It'll get me through. This too shall end. Well... Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Like, do you think you really know...
Everything's got a beginning, everything's got an end.
Yeah, but some things end badly.
Yeah.
Do you ever think you truly know when people are having trouble in their relationships?
I mean, I guess you can never really know unless they, like, explicitly tell you.
Exactly.
But I mean, you know...
Do you think you know when people are being abused? Probably not. Or you would do something about it. It's the same type of thing.
What am I going to do about it?
Well, you report them, or you try to pull them aside and say, you got to get away from this. You can't do this.
Well, I mean...
There are options.
Report them. I think reporting them is not a bad option, I guess.
Right. So there are options, but they don't see those options because they're in it. Being in it and watching it are two different things.
You can always just, like, beat up the person.
No, because then they're going to come beat up that person. They're still with them. But my point is that you never really truly know what's going on until somebody tells you. So if they don't tell you, you can't do anything. And sometimes they're not going to leave the problem.
Like, I don't know. I just think people got their own problems to worry about.
Right.
So I tend to worry about my problems.
Why do you think people end up on drugs? Because they want to?
We are like psychiatric meds?
And no, or I'm talking about drug addicts and things of that nature. You think they just, that's a good idea.
No.
They're trying to get away from something.
Well, it depends on the drugs.
No, I think they're trying to get away from something.
A lot
and
of
then they get on them, and the more, the better. They always pick up. They don't ever slow down.
Now, I don't know what the percentage is. I don't remember. But a lot of people who are addicted to, heroin and fentanyl and things like that literally just got addicted to opioids because of, surgeries and whatnot.
You know, that's a cop-out. It's a cop-out.
It's not a cop-out.
Yeah, it is a cop-out because a lot of people who take opioids and pain pills do not get addicted to them.
Yeah.
It's a cop-out.
They prescribed me OxyContin when I was in the hospital with my surgery. I just opted to not take any of them.
Because?
Because I was not about OxyContin.
But what does that mean?
It's an opioid. Right. I don't know. I'm not.
So you're not about...
I would rather be in pain than...
But why is that? Now, so you have to dig deep into that to figure out what the problem is.
I don't trust... Okay, the United States takes something like 75% of the world's opioids. There's no way... You're telling me we have 75% of the world's extreme aches and pains over here? I'm calling cap. There's no way.
So this is a news issue you have a problem with? So you're not going to take a pain medication because of the stats?
I'm not going to... Okay. We take 75% of the world's opioids, roughly, give or take, a little bit. And we have a big addiction problem, and we can't seem to correlate the two together
right.
for some reason.
But if
you don't think that the overprescribing of opioids has something to do with the fact that we have an addiction problem?
Oh no, I do.
All right then.
But I also
so
know,
I just don't trust it.
But now whoa,
like
so
what,
you don't allow for the whoa, don't allow for the commas.
Well,
that's
what I wasn't done.
No, hold on. But the problem is, see, what you're saying and what is fact are two different things. You're saying that opioids lead to addiction. For some.
Yeah, for some.
Yeah, for some. If you don't have that fear...
I wouldn't about to run the risk. So I
do. Well, see, I would, because I don't have a fear of that. I have zero fear of being addicted to opioids. Now, I guess, could it happen? It could. But I don't... That doesn't even run through my mind, because I have never had an addictive personality. I've never been addicted to anything. So... It doesn't enter my mind. Now, if you've had addiction in your life, probably crosses your mind if you've had to quit something that you were addicted to. That's probably a process. And you didn't like it. So why run this risk? You know what's interesting to me? I know a guy, and everybody, has their own personal stories. I know a guy who was very alcoholic. Alcohol, absolutely alcoholic. Went to treatment centers two times to get off alcohol. And finally did. But when was diagnosed with a... psychological disorder would not take the drugs for the psychological disorder. Now, what was the reason? Didn't want to be addicted. Now, why is he addicted when so many people are not addicted? Because he had went through addiction. He had seen what it did to his life. He knew how hard it was to get off. Took two attempts in a full-blown center to get off of it. There's a fear there. When you don't have that fear because you've never been addicted to anything, you don't think like that.
There was no addiction.
No addiction to what?
I had that surgery in, 11th grade. Maybe 10th grade.
No, but I don't think you see that as a normal thought to have. That's not a normal thought. It's not a normal thought to think, if I take a pain pill... in the hospital, there's a chance I can become addicted.
They gave me, 30 of those.
You don't have to take 30. Take one.
I didn't take any.
Because?
Actually, I did take one. I took one on the transit from the hospital.
Why'd you take one?
Because the doctors were very, very suggestive that I take one before I leave. Because, essentially, they figured that the car ride home was going to be painful.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I don't know. I ended up taking one.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I don't know how it would have been otherwise.
Right.
But, they were changing out the gauze or whatever that they packed into my leg while they were waiting for it to dry or whatever they were doing. I don't know. Get the swelling down, maybe. Anyways, they gave me Dilaudid, I think. They gave me some painkiller through a syringe. They gave me half of this syringe, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. You don't need. I don't need any more of the of that because it was a nurse doing it." And I was like, "That's good. Don't need any more." And
then, but you seem to have a worry of medicine.
I don't. Yeah, I don't trust doctors.
Because
it goes again. We prescribe 75% of the world's opioids.
You're not making these decisions based on stats.
Why can't I make these decisions based
on
stats?
Because that's not any doesn't make any sense.
Well, I wasn't.
That's like saying you get in more car crashes than plane crashes. So travel by plane everywhere.
I wasn't in. If I was in like screaming, crying pain, yes, maybe I would have had them give me the rest of the Dilaudid. I was not. I was cool. No, I was fine. And then they gave it to me anyway.
I think you're missing the point.
Despite me saying to not, by the way.
But that has nothing to do with stats. There's something. There's some thought going through your brain when they're putting that in you that's making you get anxious.
I don't know. Also, I don't like the feeling that the painkillers give you.
Which is what?
Like, I will go from, like, fully alert and conscious to, like half dead in, like, literally a split second.
See, I don't have that.
Have you ever, again, they gave me Dilaudid directly through a syringe into my veins. I went from, like, conscious to, like, loopy in, like, not even, like, literally a split second.
Okay, but how did you know that prior to them giving it to you? That was going to happen?
Well, I didn't, I guess.
Right, so now here we are.
But they did!
If somebody gives me something...
They gave me half the Dilaudid.
Yeah, but this doesn't make any sense. Again, back to the point. If you give me a drug and I have an allergic reaction to it... When you come back, the reason I'm going to say I don't want that drug is because I had an allergic reaction to it. We're going to have to try something else because I got sick when you gave that to me. But if you're giving it to me for the first time and I'm panicking, I don't know what's going to happen. So what's the fear there? It's not based in anything.
Maybe I just have a fear of medicine. I don't know. I don't like to go to the doctors in general.
Right.
I don't like to take medicine.
But I don't know if that's more of a fear or more of a paranoia. But see, that is right. And I think that's what a lot of people have, which is back to the original conversation here, which is that's really what people are. They're paranoid. They're paranoid that everybody else is going through the same thing. Everybody else has got their problems.
Not the same thing.
They don't. They're not.
Everybody else got their own problems.
Not necessarily. Not the same type of problems, not the same level of problems, and they're not always going through them at the same time as you. Like somebody going through a disease right now, they've got it a lot worse than I've got it.
Also, like, I don't know, like, I have friends who have reached out to people to ask for help with whatever, and they'll basically get hit with something like, you know, get over it. Like, you know, there's kind of no point if they're just going to be like, well, you just got to forget about it. I mean, like, okay.
Well, that's bad advice. You can be genetically predispositioned to addiction. The estimate is up to 60% that genetics influence the risk of addiction for various substances. This person out there listening, I went to urgent care for an earache ear infection and was prescribed Vicodin. I said I didn't want Vicodin because it hurt my stomach and was prescribed Percocet. Okay, instead. Some doctors are very generous with pain meds. Oh, absolutely. Nobody's saying they're not. That's why there was a pain medication lawsuit in Ohio. In which the opioid companies had to pay up. Nobody's saying...
Didn't change anything.
No, but my point is that a lot of people, if they're in pain, do not have that fear. And a lot of people feel the same way about...
The pain just wasn't bad enough for them... In my opinion, me being the one in pain, I didn't think the pain was bad enough for me to take something like OxyContin. Or, like, especially to get, like I said, the Dilaudid that they gave me through the IV, like, it could have literally knocked me out.
Okay.
I don't know how else to describe it.
You're knocked out every night.
I go to sleep every night. Yeah. There's a difference. Like, I will be, like, fully alert and
calm. But you'd like to drink,
like,
you
I will
say.
Be fully alert.
You've talked about the drinking escapades.
Yes.
You do that free will.
Because I want to do it.
Control.
I, Yeah, I'm selfish.
No, that's not selfish.
I want to do the thing. It's the same. I want to do the things that I want to do. I don't want to take the medicine.
That's control.
And the doctors gave me the medicine despite me saying otherwise.
You don't want them in control. You want to be in control.
It's my life.
Yeah, but that's not a good thing.
I said, hey, you don't need to, they gave me
because
half.
People sometimes know better than
they
you.
They gave me half the syringe of the. I guess I didn't at that time because I was a minor. But like, if I was like an adult person and I said, hey, don't give me that, and then they gave it to, I have the right to refuse treatment. I could have literally just sued them for that. Like,
again, the point is, when you are controlling, and no matter what the situation is, it's not a good trait because you think you know better than everybody.
I don't think I know, but the doctors definitely have a better understanding of medicine than I do.
Well, okay.
I just think that, like, look, for I was the one laying in the hospital bed.
Okay.
I felt that my pain was not bad enough for you to give me more painkillers.
The doctor felt different.
The doctors aren't in pain. I was the one in pain. Okay. Why are you giving me, like I said, I, the one laying in the hospital bed while they were taking stuff out of my leg, was like, I don't need any more painkillers. They were like, and they gave me more painkillers.
Well, that's what they thought.
They're wrong.
Okay.
I was the one laying in the hospital bed in pain. How are they going to tell me what my pain feels like?
Well, I don't think they can tell you what your pain feels like, but they can tell you what you need to have prescribed for you. You can argue with the doctors, I guess. That's your business.
And they don't listen anyways.
Well, I don't think they're... if you're in the hospital, you're there for a reason.
Again, I have the right to refuse treatment. I could have... I mean, I didn't...
Well, you should have done that.
I was a child.
Well...
17.
But that's a control issue.
Hey, that saved me, though, because all that medical bills went to my parents.
Ah, now there's another fear. Finances.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
See, that's a whole nother thing. But the point... remains that it's there's always something issue there, and I believe control is a big issue of that, huge issue when it comes to medicine, because I will talk to people a lot of times about people who clearly are depressed and have anxiety issues, and I'll say, why don't you go see a psychiatrist? Clearly, I've said it on this show many times, everybody needs to see a psychiatrist, and they will say, because they're going to prescribe me something, and I say, okay, so if they do, they do. And they say, well, I won't know what I'm doing. And I say, have you taken psychiatric medication? No. Well, that's what happens. How do you know that's what happens? I say, I bet you there are other people in the building we're in right now who are on psychiatric medication. Do you think they don't know what they're doing? I think they do. So then we get to the point
the people
of...
people I know who have psychiatric medicine who don't take psychiatric medicine say they don't take it because it makes them feel like a zombie.
Right, but that's not everybody. Absolutely not everybody. I've known people who took psychiatric medication, and if they didn't take the psychiatric medication, they would have been horrible to deal with. But they took it. They were absolutely fine.
I think it has more to do with how you behave towards other... or I don't know how to... Basically, it's just to make you not inconvenience other people.
No, it's a screw-up, and you can't do it forever. Because eventually you will run into it. And do you think people who commit suicide think that's the best option?
Yeah.
In that moment. Do you think they thought that was the best option 10 years earlier?
No, they would have done it 10 years earlier.
Exactly. So what happened in that 10-year period? Things deteriorated. And they could not get it up. They could not right the boat. And a lot of times they won't reach out for help. That's why I always say, somebody who tells you they're going to commit suicide, probably not going to do it. Because it's an impulsive decision. And if you were going to do it, you wouldn't tell somebody because they would stop you. That's logical. So here lies the problem. Again, the more silent you are on any issue, for whatever your reasoning is, the more trouble you're in.
Oh, no. Like I said... I just tend to deal with my problems.
Well, as time goes on, it gets ugly. But and also, a lot of times it leads to alcoholism, because that's a mask. And then someday, I'm just going to drive. Won't do hurt. Hadn't screwed up before. And then what happens? Dead. And, you know, that it's not outright suicide, but you knew what the chances were. And you might take somebody else with you in the process. And frankly, I don't want to be taken with somebody else.
Then don't get in the car.
Well, but they do, because what do all alcoholics say who kill somebody? I never thought.
All I'm saying, look, If I wasn't intoxicated and I got into a car with somebody who was, I'm gonna drive. There's no way I'm letting you drive me if I'm not intoxicated.
Some people drive alone.
And secondly, if we were both intoxicated, I'm probably still not gonna get in the car.
People
with
do
you.
It all the time.
Yes, people do it all. But look,
not about you hitting me.
Whose choice? Oh. Well.
Yeah, I don't care for that, but it happens all the time. Do you know how many people die in it's like a 12-hour period? It's like 36 people in a 12-hour period.
Yeah, but I don't. The majority of people who die in car wrecks, I don't think that the majority of people who die in car wrecks have anything to do with alcohol.
No, I'm not about alcohol specifically.
A small number of people who die.
No, check it.
What?
No, how many people in 12 hours die from alcohol-related car accidents? We'll get the stats here. Then we'll wrap up. We'll be back tonight, 8:15 to 10 p.m. And Matt will be on 10:15 to 11 tonight. But it's don't hide your feelings, I guess, is the way to go here.
Hide your feelings.
Yeah.
Well, don't hide your feelings.
You'll end up on the statistic list.
Just deal with your problems yourself.
You'll end up right. Trust me, you're not the smartest person in the world.
I didn't say I was the smartest.
No, find somebody who's smarter than you. It's just like if you're the smartest person in your group, find a new group.
There's definitely people smarter than I am.
No, but I'm saying nobody's smart. Nobody's the smartest person in the world. Somebody can bring something to you that you didn't have before.
It's loading. Based on the average rate of one death every 39 minutes, approximately 18 people die in alcohol-related car accidents every 12 hours. 18 people every 12 hours.
So, you said 18 minutes?
At the rate of one death every 39 minutes.
39 minutes. Okay, so it's what? What's the rate?
18 people.
That's a lot.
12 hours.
Every 12 hours, 18 people die by alcohol-related car. That, to me, is a lot. Because those are all preventable. And that's a big issue.
One second. I just want to see how many people die in a car accident every 12 hours. Almost four times.
Right.
Almost four times as many people.
Well, guess what?
So
those are preventable. Those are not preventable.
They're all accidents.
But the alcoholism is 100% preventable. You don't get in the car all alcoholed up, you're not going to have that accident.
Don't get in the car, you're not going to have that accident.
No, because people have to drive. These are alcohol-related accidents. That makes zero sense. Now you're defending alcoholism, driving a car while drunk?
No, that's not a good thing to do. I'm just saying that, like, it's not like everybody who dies in a car is.
That's not what I said. I said, that's what it said. Alcohol-related car accidents.
It's like a quarter to a third.
Fine. I don't need that at all. That number can be zero if you don't do it. The other ones, accidents happen. Accidents happen in everything. But I don't need it because you decided to drink. That could have been stopped.
Don't drink and drive.
Right. But they do it. How many people have died since we did this show? 7, 8? Who needed that? All right. We'll be back tonight, 8:15. Don't go anywhere. Because it's going to be good, and we've got a good repeat of the Charlie Evers Show coming up next. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Use of alcohol and other drugs. Visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
It's now time for news. News about people,